Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Welcome to Hard Currency, the weekly podcast of the Financial Times on the foreign exchange market. I'm Roger Blitz, and it's been a quiet week for data, but a pretty noisy one for central banks. The Bank of England is having a strong difference of opinion on whether to raise rates, while the independence of the South Africa Reserve Bank is under pressure from the idea of changing its mandate. All this against the backdrop of central banks like the Bank of Canada and Norges Bank starting to take the foot off the easy policy pedal. So, are we in for a period of policy-making upheaval? Our guest this week is Peter Dixon, Chief Economist of Commerzbank. Peter, welcome. The highlight of the Forex week was Andy Haldane, Chief Economist of the Bank of England, the most dovish of the bank's policymakers, becoming a hawk. Did that have you spluttering into your mid-morning coffee when you heard that?
Yeah, thanks, Roger. Well, I have to confess that I was rather surprised at Mr. Haldane's
You were
comments.
Not the only one.
Yeah. I mean, for a number of reasons. I mean, obviously, the governor had come out the day before and said the time does not appear to be right to raise rates
Indeed.
Now. And of course, Andy Haldane has been pretty dovish over the course of the past, 3 years, I think, his tenure on the MPC. And for him to come out and say there's a case for a rate hike certainly surprised me. And I think what was even more surprising was the fact that he gave a relatively short time horizon for that rate hike, possibly in the second half of the year. You know, obviously,
Indeed.
We're almost there.
And this after the dissent last week of the Monetary Policy Committee. So it was 5-3. It's kind of 5 versus 3.5. Do you think Haldane was saying to Carney pointedly, you're wrong? I mean, obviously, they knew that. Actually, Carney's speech was a delayed speech from what was meant to be the previous week's Mansion House speech. But kind of the Haldane speech was in the diary. So was that a pointed message?
Well, you could certainly read it that way. I mean, it would be unusual for the Bank of England internal members to disagree quite so strongly in public and certainly, you know, so close together in terms of time. But I think we have to read it as a message to say, look, there appears to be growing dissent, not just within the Bank of England, I think, but also across the whole of the monetary policy spectrum, policymaker spectrum rather, which suggests that, you know, maybe it's time to start thinking about raising rates, having held them at such low levels for such a long time.
I mean, you're talking there about the Bank of Canada making it very clear that they were shifting, and Norges Bank was saying on Thursday that they are moving. So, fair to say the tide has turned?
It does feel like that, yes. I mean, obviously, in the UK, things are slightly different because of Brexit. But I think on a global perspective, you know, what are we now? Nearly 9 years on from the Lehman's collapse. We're starting to work through. In fact, I think we've probably pretty much worked through the worst of the implications of the collapse in terms of what it's done to the financial system. And I think central bankers generally are following the Fed and saying, look, you know, with the Fed even thinking about potentially reducing the size of its balance sheet over the course of the next few months, maybe it's time for the rest of us to start doing some work as well.
But the markets are looking slightly two ways on that. I mean, on the one hand, they're pushing up the Canadian dollar, Norwegian krona in response to this. On the other hand, they're not committed to the idea of the Fed continuing to raise rates and, in fact, being quite sanguine about the level of inflation. So is the markets facing two ways?
Well, I think the markets have long thought that the Fed is being a little bit too aggressive with regard to, you know, another one or two rate hikes this year and then three next year. I mean, I'm not saying it's wrong, but certainly the markets think that it could be a little bit on the aggressive side. And I think for that reason, if other central banks start to make more hawkish noises, there's every potential for their currencies to appreciate vis-a-vis the dollar, because quite simply, I think the balance of probabilities is that the Fed will underdeliver rather than overdeliver.
Yes. I mean, all this kind of goes to the whole deep dive scrutiny of inflation. Who is the central bank who criticised others for being inflation nutters?
I think it was Australian, George, wasn't it?
Yeah.
George's phrase.
I mean, it's got a point, really, isn't it? I mean, in a sense, what Janet Yellen effectively was saying the other week was, are we obsessing a little too much about the minutiae of inflation? What's your view?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there are a number of issues here. I mean, on the one hand, you know, central banks over the course of, I guess, the past couple of years have looked at inflation and said, oh, there are a number of special factors which have, you know, precluded us from acting. There comes a point where you say, look, let's forget the special factors. I think there's a trend emerging here. But on the other hand, I think you have to say that although that a lot of central banks have a mandate, most central banks have a mandate to focus purely on inflation, I think they're well aware of the fact that policy has to be focused with much more than just inflation in mind. And as a consequence, with growth picking up, with inflation not really sort of gathering pace, but certainly on an upward curve, I mean, I think there was a sense that for many central banks, at least, they are a little bit behind the curve. The Fed was for a very long time. It's beginning to catch up. I mean, some of the other central banks in, well, certainly the Norges Bank, perhaps, and the Bank of Canada are beginning to get it.
Yes.
But I think the ECB is way behind the curve on that one.
Yes. It's hard to extrapolate the row in the South African Reserve Bank with others. There are obviously so many particular political issues there. On the other hand, they are talking about broadly. I mean, the criticism there was you're just too much focused on one thing and you need to look more broadly at the wider impact of the economy on all sorts of social groups. That's too far to go for other central banks, isn't it? They're still going to focus on
Sure. I mean, I think the general rule is that you need as many objectives as you instruments as you have objectives.
Yes.
If your only instrument is the interest rate, then you know you have to target it on one thing, or maybe two, in the worst case, growth and inflation.
Yeah.
You can't start to worry about things like redistribution. I mean, after all, the Bank of England governor, Carney, has said many times that redistribution and other issues of that nature are in the realm of fiscal policy. So central bankers should really stick to what they're good at.
Yes.
And I certainly think that the debate that we're having with regard to South Africa rather detracts from the fact that this is a world-renowned institution which has done a pretty good job, I think, under fairly trying circumstances.
Yes.
Given the political winds in South Africa, which seem to be deviating ever further away from, I think, the rainbow nation that was promised, I think a lot of people in the markets are looking at this situation there and saying, well, let's be careful because if the Reserve Bank is forced down a path which it doesn't want to go down, I think that will affect very, very badly on the rand and other South African assets as well.
Putting South Africa slightly to one side, therefore, we have this continuing debate in markets, at least, about the faith they should have in either central banks or politicians. And the inclination is to stick with the central banks for as long as possible until there's greater confidence in, take, for example, the Eurozone, I suppose, which has been through all sorts of upheavals. And it's only now we're starting to see some growth returning. So there perhaps might be understandable market concern that if the policymakers are withdrawing from the field, they're at least doing so very slowly.
Yes, I mean, I think that central banks, in many respects, have done a heroic job because they stepped into the breach when many policymakers, many politicians at least, were absent.
Yes.
I mean, in Europe in particular, in the Eurozone and in the UK, governments focused very much on fiscal austerity, which obviously did the economy no favours. But as a consequence, central bankers had to compensate by keeping the foot to the floor in terms of monetary policy. There is a sense, perhaps, that this austerity mantra is beginning to wear a little bit thin.
Mm.
As a consequence, I think central bankers perhaps feel that they can, maybe withdraw a little bit of that stimulus in order to allow a sort of normalisation of the policy stance, if you will.
You brought us very neatly back to the UK with that last remark, Peter. You look at sterling stumbling around, trying to work out where it's going to go amidst political uncertainty, Brexit uncertainty, government uncertainty. How does this this lively debate in the Bank of England play, do you think, with currency operators? I mean, does this simply add to their level of concern?
In a sense, you might think it would, because obviously it's an uncertainty factor. But actually, the good news is that from a political risk perspective, all the risks are tilted to the downside. I mean, if Brexit talks go wrong, sterling tanks.
Mm.
But what we're talking about in the UK is an asymmetric bias towards tightening with respect to monetary policy, which in a sense should support the pound. So, I mean, I don't believe that the two will exactly offset each other, but I think the monetary policy issues will certainly act as a dampener for sterling if the Brexit negotiations turn out to be rather more problematic than many in government think they will be.
But at least we appear to be beyond the sharp shifts in the currency that we once had. I mean, it's actually quite remarkable that since the election, actually sterling really hasn't done that much.
Very true. I think you have to look at this in the longer term context. I mean, obviously, there was a very sharp downward shift 12 months ago. Mm. That was a reflection, I think, of the Brexit, the post-referendum, if you like, uncertainty premium. We've had a couple of wobbles in the interim when government policy seems to be going in a slightly more hard Brexit direction. Mm. But I guess the point is that since the election, there was a sense that the UK is not quite as wedded to this idea of a hard Brexit as it once was. And I think that is one of the factors which is helping to support sterling, because you know I have a horrible feeling that if we were heading towards the cliff with regard to hard Brexit, sterling would be a lot lower than it currently
Indeed.
Is.
Give us an idea how we should look at the next data, which is going to be clearly more interest than usual for people watching the BOE.
Yeah, I mean, I think first up we have some data next week on GDP. Now, you may say, well, who cares? It's a revised number. There was an outside chance that number could be revised back up to show a 0.3% Q-on-Q growth rate. Remember, it was revised down in the second revision. I mean, if that is the case, then you can imagine that the markets are going to say, well, actually, the economy is not quite as soft as we thought. Mm. So that's something to look out for. It's not going to be a big market mover, but it's there. But as we go further ahead, the things which markets are going to be looking for are inflation heading above 3% sooner rather than later, wages, the extent to which wages are going to trail the CPI numbers, because obviously falling real wages not good for the economy, and I guess also the other thing is things like retail sales, which have been fairly erratic, but I think the trend is clearly towards a very soft retail sector, and I think soft retail sales will be one of the factors which persuades the Bank of England to hold fire with regard to monetary tightening, or indeed if sales go the opposite way, then maybe it could be a factor triggering a hike.
And what about the price of oil? I mean, is that going to play a role?
Clearly it will. I think it's interesting that it's really only over the course of the past sort of week or 10 days that markets have started to really focus on the fact that we have a huge supply glut, which is not going to go away over the second half of the year. So oil prices will remain depressed. We'll be very lucky, I think, to get them back above $50 on any sustainable basis anytime soon. And obviously that will start to feed through to the inflation figures, both in the UK and, of course, elsewhere. And I guess for those central banks who are banking on higher inflation to drive through rate hikes, the oil price could be an additional obstacle for
yes.
them.
I mean, oil is just one of a number of structural shifts that could influence inflation. You look at demographics, you look at technological change. All of these things are just big pictures which you'd like the benefit of hindsight of, say, 20 or 30 years rather than the 20 or 30 days to work out where this goes for inflation. Does it make, I mean, you're an economist, you must look at this all the time, Peter. I mean, how on earth do you judge good quality inflation data against the not so good?
What's good quality inflation data? Well, I think it's, for me at least, I tend to look at wages relative to prices.
That's the big...
For me at least, I'd like to see real wages growing in line with productivity. Now, obviously productivity is fairly depressed, but I think it's interesting that in many countries, real wages have actually undershot even the miserable productivity. Now, what that tells me either is that wage growth is too low or price inflation, funnily enough, is too high, which might seem strange given what we've been through over the course of the past, past few months. But I think what's interesting, talking about the longer term trends with regards to inflation, we need look no further than Japan. This is an economy which has a rapidly contracting demographic profile. And of course, despite all the best efforts of the BOJ to stimulate inflation, it hasn't worked.
Yes.
And I think the demographics are a key feature which are helping to keep inflation low. If that's something which continues to make its presence felt across Europe, if indeed, as you said, the technological issues begin to put even more downward pressure on prices as a result of competitiveness issues, then it could be that the long-term outlook for inflation across large parts of the industrialised world is for a very modest rate of growth indeed.
So finally, Peter, does that mean that not only are we heading for a realignment in central bank policymaking, but a realignment in central bank views on inflation, how to measure it, how to view it over the medium to long term?
Well, I think ultimately that is where we're going. I mean, central banks have spent an awful lot of time trying to figure out what's driving inflation. They have some idea, but they're not 100% convinced. But I think what's interesting is that they have to rely on statistical agencies to do the job for them. Mm. The statistics agencies generally are running very hard to try and catch up with the trends, to try and figure out what it is, how to measure the changing shifts in the economy. And I think in markets, there's a tendency perhaps to look back and say, well, you know, we've got these old, long-standing relationships which tend to hold. I think what's interesting now is that, you know, we're clearly finding out that they don't. And we're going to have to so keep an eye on these trends, because they're not going to happen overnight. But over the longer term horizon, you know, I think we'll think very differently about the factors driving inflation in 5 or 10 years compared to what we did 10 years ago.
Thank you very much, Peter Dixon of Commerzbank. Join us again next week for Hard Currency, a week that includes inflation numbers out of Germany, France, and indeed the Eurozone, as well as the US, to digest. Until then, from Hard Currency, it's goodbye.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of The Next Five podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of The Next Five wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.